everyone, and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Will Alexander.
Yes, you are, on the world's a better place for it, young William. This week, we're going to talk about data, annual reports, friendships, what dog shows are all about, all that and more, right here on the Dog Show Drive. Once again, in our well-lit and lovely studios in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Milton, Ontario.
Yeah. The studio of Milton and Kalamazoo, Michigan. Yeah. Brought to you from the studios of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hey, good morning, Wayne.
Good morning, Will. You can't see us, which is for the good, trust us. It's definitely for the best that you cannot. But we have decided that we need a circle light or some kind of light to make us look better. And it's just funny, the colors we turn, being abject amateurs. But
we're hoping someday you'll see this, but hopefully you'll see the end result when it's perfection.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. When it's the Letterman show.
Yeah. Our makeup people are doing a hell of a job right now. Yeah. they're all over. It's a little, when I did work in TV, Cheryl and her friend were doing makeup. They went to a class on how to apply makeup, and they were sitting around the table last week laughing hysterically because they don't really care about these things, but they thought they'd try it. And they had the little lights with the mirrors, and they're putting all their makeup on. And I walked over and I said, would you like to hear some makeup stories? When I worked at television, you can go on forever. You can go on forever about how horrible it is to have to apply that stuff.
Well, I've never had a lot of experience. But when P won the garden and we had to do all those TV shows afterwards, not every one of them, but the odd one wanted to fix my makeup as if I had any makeup on. And that is, once it's on in those lights, that is the most uncomfortable feeling on your face.
It is.
My hat's off to them,
It's no fun. And it gets all over your clothes. But we were doing an outdoor shoot in Florida once, and hot sunny day as it is in Florida, and then the rain just opened up and just, really super Florida, burst of rain. We ran to the hotel, and the desk clerk was hysterical because we all had the makeup running down our face. War paint. We're coming to take over. Anyway.
Wasn't there just a lawyer that had stuff running down his face? That was last year, I think.
That was Rudy Giuliani. It was hair dye.
Every once in a while, I know, and I shouldn't talk ill. Every once in a while, in the summer when Nigel was judging, you could see it around the collar of his shirt.
Yes, that's what happens. That's
exactly. Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani presented me with a plaque in Madison Square Park many years ago, and someone took a picture, which I still have, which is hysterical because he had a black suit on and there was 3 inches of dandruff on both shoulders in the picture. It was a mess then, God bless him. Anyway, on to dogs. We just wrapped up some of the bigger shows. We had a giant weekend between Louisville and York, Pennsylvania, both had extraordinary weekends. And it got me to looking into some data, Will, because that's the kind of guy.
Imagine that. After we were talking about light reading before bed. Wayne does this. I watched TikTok on it. I watched one last night about how to make a pancake cake in a rice cooker.
And I read.
Take a night, Will. Oh, wait a second. I got to watch how to make this pancake cake.
I read a little social science by Stephen Dubner, and then I read 9
Annual. That was next. After the pancake cake, I checked in on that.
And then I went through 9 AKC annual reports, trying to torch the data to make it speak. The problem is there's not a lot of data anymore. There's been a lack, and this is an interesting aspect of our sport. You know, the delegates work really hard. The board works really hard. The staff works really hard. And all we care about is who's judging Friday. And if the major's going to hold.
Yeah.
I'll bet that 90% of the people, no, I'm going to go 95. I'm going to go 98% of the people in our sport can't name six board members.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And nor do they know how the process works of the board being elected. We have a delegate body that elects the board. The board then elects the officers of the American Kennel Club every year, the president, vice presidents, and so on, treasurer, CEO, you know, the financial guys and all that. But they also publish the annual report, which is required. Now, whether its dissemination is required, I don't know. How much you have to publish, I don't know. But when I was there in the 90s, it was one of the things I did was work on that with the staff. And there was a paragraph called By the Numbers. It included some really, really valuable data, including number of dog shows, number of performance events. There'll be, you know, all the events broken down, and also the entries per event. It also listed the registration numbers, which went silent since the dive, which happened in the early 2000s. In, I think it was 99 was a high point, 1999, where it was 1.4 million dogs being registered. And it went down to about 500,000 or lower. The good news, and it is great news, it's on the rebound. It's not going to get back to 1.4 million real soon, but it's up around 800,000, which is a really good number. And the staff and the board and the delegates have done a good job at getting that back. But we just don't know enough about how, when, or why. And we don't know what happened between 2002 and 2020 when the data went missing. I don't know. We can... Is it because we can't handle the big news, the bad news? I don't know. I don't know what the secret is. We're all in this together. But that's how it went. And then there were no annual reports at all from 2018 to today. And then this month earlier, the annual reports for 2018, 19, 20, 21 all showed up on the website all at once. They're only a few pages long. They used to be 40, 50 pages long. And they have maybe 200-300 words and two pie charts. But it's probably what's required, a financial...
Yeah, probably everything legally that you need.
Yeah, but we're missing such good data. You know, we really missed... there's so much in there that used to be very useful. For example, well, registered handlers. Well, I mean, who would think about that, right? Why would you bother? But if you go through these reports and extract all that data, which is painstaking, but it's interesting, you come up with some interesting things. Like in 2006, there were 149 registered handlers.
That's when did it start? Was that when it started, 2006?
That's the earliest record I could find in the annual reports, but there's not always that data in there.
Yeah.
So I think it was around that time, but I'm not sure exactly what date. And from 149 in 2006 to 73 in 2019, which is the last time it was published. So less than, you know, it went in half, less than half over those years. What does that mean, you think? Well, I mean, how does a reduction of from almost 150 to 73, 149 to 73, 50% plus, that's a number. That's great. But what does it say?
Yeah. Why did it happen? Like, I can only relate it to up here with our CPHA, Canadian Professional Handlers Association. Now, ours isn't to the point, to the extent of the registered handler program, but we do have some requirements. And when we first restarted the CPHA, we had an abundance. So we had a good number, and it dwindled as things progressed. or things actually would go wrong, or complaints would come in, the numbers would dwindle. And we, Shannon Shear and I talked about it. And I think the only reason was because a lot of the younger handlers didn't like being policed, and we weren't trying to police them. We just had requirements that we wanted them to live up to be a member. And when we started questioning things about their kennel situations, their truck situations, their billing situations, when we would inquire when a complaint would come in, you know, and I know we tried to stay positive, but we lost some members because they didn't like those inquiries. So
that just might be a social norm shift. Where people, you know, are less willing to let Big Brother or whatever they can see.
Yeah.
Or it may be that they figured they can still make money without having to worry about the complaints.
That's true. It's so funny, though, because when I was a young kid, not even a young handler, a young kid, I wanted nothing more to be a PHA member. Yeah. That was where I wanted to. I couldn't wait till I could apply to the PHA.
And now I don't know where that stands. I don't have those numbers. I wonder what the intersection of data is between the registered handler and the PHA is.
Is there still a dog handler's guild too? Remember George started a dog handler's guild?
I think,
or was it George or Dick? I can't remember who started that, but yeah. George Ward or Dick Cooper, I can't remember.
Yeah. So I don't know what that means. I do know that it puts clients in an interesting position. You do have more, more comfort knowing that those facilities and vehicles have been inspected.
Right.
I don't know what the requirements are for each of them anymore. I just know that there's half that they're used. Well, let's put it this way. There are a whole lot, in my anecdotal observation, there's a whole lot more handlers in the ring than there are not handlers. And we only have 73 of them registered.
Yeah.
So agent,
right?
Anybody can be, right?
Or as George would call them, secret agents. No one knows their handlers but them.
No one knows where they live. It's true. But there's so much that I'm hoping I'm really hoping that we're going to get an actual annual report this year. They have the data. I think it's so useful. When you're a breed club, for example, and what started me on this was the most popular breeds in America list came out. And by the way, CKC did it too this year, right?
Yeah, I just got it. I got it. Was it yesterday or the day before? Yeah.
You mentioned David Letterman before. I'll tell you how this list started. When I was there at the AKC in the early 90s, David Letterman was just catching on with a top 10 list. It was, it took off. His top 10 lists were hysterical. And you do one now, Will. I mean,
mine are right there with his. I know they're right there. I'm not going to tell him. We'll tell him later. Go ahead.
But it was a new phenomenon. It wasn't a top 10 lists weren't a big thing. He really catapulted the whole concept. And I was right across the street in New York waiting to receive it. And I thought, man, this is a good idea. So a few of us got together. I was vice president of communications, which included public education, legislation, and public relations. And I thought, well, let's come up with an idea how to use this. And we met as a group, John Mandeville, who I missed. Oh, God, he was such a great guy. And just my real compatriot at work, Terry Stacey, John, and I, were a team that bounced ideas off of each other and came up with some good stuff. This was one of them. And we came up with the top 10 most popular breeds. Immediately, the media seized on it. And I think it's probably receives the most press of any AKC release. Actually, I'd bet money on it that every year, it's the biggest one. It's covered everywhere.
Well, it can relate to everybody. It relates to that kind of a list. So,
yeah. And the thing that's always bothered me, when I was on the East Coast, born and raised there, worked for the AKC there, dog shows there, the rest of the country doesn't really come into view much. And I say that I'm sad that that's the way it is, but that's just the way it is. And when you leave there,
it's like hockey in Toronto, in the center of the universe. You know?
Yeah. When I moved to the Midwest, I realized that things were different and there were other things in the world, including other registries. So the lowest ranked breed is the English Foxhound. There were 15 at the National. Now, many breeds last year didn't even have one, or for years haven't had one because they don't have enough dogs. But the English Foxhounds had, and I think it was because Eddie Zook, who really people respect in hounds, it was right at Aldi with all the beagles. But
that was a great idea, by the way.
It really worked. Yeah. But when you have the number, 15 at the National and number last and most popular, you might think that there's only a few left in the world. That's not true. Masters of the Foxhounds Association has 70,000 English Foxhounds in their public database, which anyone can access online, by the way.
Obviously, because you did.
I did.
You did. Well, I was learning how to make cake. You were checking those.
Useless information. Well, I'm full of it.
I'm going to try the cake, though, later.
That's right. I want one of those pancake cakes. So I guess what I'm saying is it has never been or never what I intended it to mean. It was the most popular dogs in America. It's not. It's just not.
No.
It doesn't take into the account all the National Grand Association Greyhounds. They're purebred that have been raced and retired. Greyhounds only, the list of AKC most popular breeds only covers the AKC show greyhounds and any pets, which is rare, I guess.
So basically, it covers any AKC registered.
Yeah. So this is
a top. I wonder if the CKC one even says that. Does the CKC one say CKC registered, or does it say generic top 10? I don't know. I'll look.
Yeah. I think, the proper list for this would be named in hindsight. We should have named it 10 breeds most registered with the American Kennel Club. That has no cachet. And it wouldn't be a great press piece. So I like it the way it is. It's just that we need to know that that's not a representation of most popular breeds in America. Cane Corso is a number 18, which is interesting. French Bulldogs leapfrogged Labradors. And we mentioned some of that before.
We touched on that last week.
Yeah, but it got me to the data beyond that. And it got me to start looking at number of entries, number of dog shows, one of my favorites. And number of judges, all that used to be in every annual report. They would list each event by the number of events, the number of entries in that event. And I found that information compelling and necessary to gauge the health of the sport. What do you think absentees run, Will, at shows?
Well, I remember when I was showing dogs and there was no real stats being taken. The numbers to be for your wins, we would take the total entry, and every time if our dog went best in the show, we'd say 600 points minus 10%. We always minus 10% for absentees.
Yeah, I wonder how that trend works and if it's different in America. I just took, this is total anecdotal and unscientific data. I took 18 shows. And then I had to go to sleep, but I took 8 and I had to watch a TikTok video. So I had to, I do not even have TikTok for that reason. But I took 18 shows that were held in March and some in February, just 18. And I tried to do them geographically spread. So they were Midwest, East Coast, California. And an average 1600 dog show had 285 absentees. So almost 18, 20%.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's an anomaly. It wasn't a year's worth of data. But I think absentees might be up for two reasons. One, especially versus the Canadian data. Our handlers here enter a whole lot of shows they don't go to.
Right.
If you're running for top 10 or top whatever, top number, wonder schnitzel doodle, you'll probably enter 300 shows and go to 200 and some. because you enter two sets of shows in the same weekend. If you're bombing out on Thursday or someone showed up you can't beat, you pack up and you go down the road.
You had a dodge.
And does that increase the number of absentees? So when we hear that, you know, 1.5 million dogs competed in AKC shows, they did not. First of all, that's useless data. The number of entries per year is pretty much useless data because we don't know how many individual dogs were, and we don't know how many absentees there were. I would love to know if there's a relationship and if there are, when entries, total entries are up, are individual dogs being shown up or down? That would be interesting data to know. So I'm hoping to massage a whole lot more of this data and do a larger paper. I did a paper for the delegate body on too many shows and not enough entries. It was well received, I guess. And I'm hoping to do more of a compilation of these annual reports to see. The beautiful thing in these annual reports was the gorgeous photographs in the art collection and some very well-written prose. Good stuff. So I hope to revisit that soon. But it's so important. The AKC is, I can tell you that when we filed taxes for the UKC, which we had to do, we were not educational foundation, not for profit. We listed ourselves as a data company because what else do you do? We don't have dogs there. The AKC doesn't have dogs there. They're primarily a data organization that does a whole lot more, obviously, whole lot more. But without their computer system, without data collecting, they don't really know what's going on. So they collect it. I just don't know what they do with it.
It was interesting when you were speaking about handlers entering multiple shows. Do you remember back when Westminster, what you had to rush, mailed in your entries or you walked in your entries, and some people were entering their dog four or five times trying to get in.
Yeah.
And I think that created a problem at Westminster because they weren't counting it. So then they made the rule that if you entered more than twice, they took the first one or took the last one, or your chances actually declined if you were entering multiple times the same dog. So remember that?
That's never going to please. Their rules can never please everybody, and it doesn't matter because they always put on an amazing show.
Yeah.
Over 300, that press release just came out. I'm sure you read it in between your TikTok videos. Over 3,000 dogs.
Should never have told them.
You tell me all the time.
My rabbit hole, that is TikTok.
Over 3,000 dogs entered at Westminster this year, which is a big entry.
It used to be capped off at 2,500 back when it was in Madison Square Garden.
So. It had to be. Yeah, it had to be. So a little more room at the tennis center. And the entries are interesting. You know, when you're used to looking at judging programs and seeing the number of entries for a 3,000 dog show, it's completely different from looking at the entries at Westminster with 3,000 dogs for the obvious reason. They're all champions. They're all invited. Yeah. They're all top dogs. So, you'll get more Goldens at Louisville than you will at Westminster because you've got 100 class dogs in there too.
But you'll get 70 champions at Westminster.
That's the cool part.
It really is.
31 German short hair specials.
How many?
31.
Well, that'll be fun.
That's a lot.
So, 31 champions.
Yeah. And, you know, not just champions, invited dogs and top dogs get in first, right?
Yeah.
So, it's going to be
fun. You'll have the top dogs in the country there for sure. You know?
Yeah, they're all in one place that day. That's for sure. So
I'm still hoping to get there. I want to just come and watch you guys. People keep asking me if I'm going to go or not, and I'm like, well.
I know. I feel like the worst friend in the world.
No, don't be ridiculous.
Will has two breeds, an Irish Setter and a Beagle that he owns and lives with. And Eddie Zook and I are both judging.
I wouldn't turn down Westminster judging so you could show your exhibit.
and by the way, just so you know, legally, Will is absolutely within his rights and rules to show both the Irish Setter to me and the Beagle to Will.
Ed. Ed.
It's Ed. Doug Belker just called my Zoom call.
Is he listening live?
Thanks. So, yeah. So I don't see you anymore. Thanks, Doug. We appreciate that.
He just wanted to have a guest appearance, and there it was.
He did. He did. Bless his heart. Anyway,
and tonight's guest, we have Mr. Doug Belker.
You are now invisible. Can you see me?
I can see you.
Yeah, I don't think it really much matters, does it? But anyway, this is bizarro world. So it's going to be one of those shows that I think is going to exceed expectations. I think people are going to be more than thrilled when they see the quality of the entry, the quality of the site, and the quality of the judging panel. Me and Eddie exceptions, of course, but it should be really
fun. It's going to be fabulous. I can't wait to see you guys judge.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to being there and just catching up with everybody. It's such a historic event, no matter where it's held. So should be fun. Anyway, anything else, young William? Where are you going? Where you been?
Well, last week I did a seminar, a handle your weight of a paper bag seminar in Cambridge, Ontario. That was fun. I had a lot of a turnout there and had some really good. I at the end of my seminars, I do a competition where I sit there on a tall director's chair and I oversee the ring. And at this show, my friend Sean Kent went through and put them through their paces. And if I didn't see enough, I'd go and I'd tell them, okay, let them do this and let them do that. And I'll tell you, it was fun to watch because everyone progressed. Everyone progressed. Oh, and cool. Then I give out, they're into two groups and you get first, second, third, fourth, just like group ribbons. And then they come back in for the best in show in the seminar. But then I also choose a most improved. Well, I'll tell you, Wayne, there was this young man that came in with his Havanese, his very first time ever showing a dog. He was like a sponge. His name was Harrison. And he listened to everything I said. And by the time he was done, he ended up going second in a very strong class. And I ended up giving him most improved too. And he's good. He could show his dog tomorrow. That's how good he really learned that weekend. It was fun to watch that progression, but everybody progressed. A young lady in there named Becky. She had a rough collie. Now I've seen Becky show before. She has, but she's deaf. Becky's deaf. So you really have to explain to her, and she really watches what's happening.
Yeah.
And she always shows a mastiff, and she does really well with her mastiffs. But she brought her mother's collie into this show, who was really unruly and really never been in that kind of environment. And I gave her a few little tips. And by the end of the class, end of this weekend, she could show that dog. She could walk in the ring and show that dog. She did I was really thrilled with all of them. When you see them, when they're really paying attention and they take things in, it's always fun, but it's more gratifying when you see that happening.
Yeah, and a good assortment of breeds too.
Oh yeah, some that aren't CKC recognized. I get American bulldogs. It's fun. It's just fun.
Any Silkins?
Yeah, I get Silkins. Yeah,
great. I know that Carmen Battaglia went out and judged the Silken Fest there national. last weekend. I can't wait to hear how that all went. I've seen some pictures and it looked like it was another giant success. Be fun to see how that goes. You know, it is interesting though, Will, we talk about this quite a bit. You coming more from a handler side, and even though I worked for handlers and showed dogs for people years ago, I think of myself coming more from a breeder side. I think we end up in the exact same place, but it means so much either way, no matter where you're coming from. If you can't see that dog, you can't, you can be that guy. And I hope that I am. And I know that you are, who will look past that and find a good dog. But man, when you've got a full plate in a minute and a half.
Oh, I know. I try to explain that to them too, when they're showing their dog and they're learning in the seminar. I try to explain how minimal time the judge is allowed to assess your dog. That's why I tell them they have to be as efficient as they can because of that minimal time. But, you know, I do classes every Tuesday at Oxford Dog Sports, and it's been great because since I stopped showing dogs, when I was showing dogs, I had a menagerie of dogs coming through here, and and I have my dogs, obviously. I have like 2 Irish setters, a Border Terrier, 2 beagles, and a Bouvier. Like, I have a menagerie here. I could have my own dog show here. But I'm like last night I did the class in Oxford, and I had an American Bulldog, is that what they call them?
American Bulldog.
And his name is 40. He's the coolest dog. He is such a character. And then I had a St. Bernard named Beckham that was so laid back. And but in the class, I called him Broken Beckham because he's lying on his side. He was so exhausted. Because I try to tell them, even though the class is for an hour, I don't want to work you for an hour because dogs don't work for an hour at dog shows. And they get the judge gets like a 10 dog class is 20 minutes, you know. It's just fun. That keeps me in touch with all the different dogs, and I like seeing them and watching them progress. And I have some of the dogs in my class I've known since they were puppies.
Really? How cool is that? Well, you know, you just have to it takes time to really go through that, and you're learning about those breeds at the same time. It's educational both ways, and seeing those temperaments in some of those new breeds, and you know, that's just good for the sport.
And you don't think I'm not practicing my judging procedure when I'm out there? Oh, I definitely am. I have this habit where I want to put my hands behind my back, and mm-hmm. I've had many people say, "Well, don't put your hands behind your back. You know, just keep them in front of you." So now I've got this thing where I'm watching them go down and back, and I have this Irish ring on, and I just sit there and spin it now, so it's in front of my hand. And that's my my hands behind my back. I actually have people watching, and I say, yell at me if my hands go behind my back.
Yeah. Well, for two reasons. One, it's unsafe, and the other, well, you know, there are parts of our anatomy, including perhaps our, not that we have stomachs, Will. We do. But if you did do that, you could be accentuating the food capture area.
Yeah. Like Alfred Hitchcock walking along.
I'm going to need to try to get my posture better too. You know, it's funny. I was just looking at a bunch of wind pictures that people posted of me giving their dogs an award or something. And I hate the way I look in those wind pictures. I think I'm going to start looking at the dog. And it's funny. If you look at judges' wind pictures, you'll see judges, you'll have to develop a style of how to hold the ribbon, Will. It's a big one, holding the ribbon right. And then the angle where you're looking at the camera, the dog, or whoever. You don't want to look like one of those idiots or just, you know, that deer in the headlight look like.
Here's my ribbon. I have different stages. I've already planned it out. And I've already planned it out, my career, how I'm going to hold the ribbon. Right now, when I'm starting out, I'm going to hold it and smile, look down at the dogs. Then in my middle career, I'm just going to hold it and look at the camera. Near the end, when I'm like 102, I'm going to let it spin so it just has the maker of the ribbon on the back and just stand there like someone shot me. Oh, I'm ready, Wayne. I've got it all picked out.
You mapped it out. It is funny, though. You know, you all of a sudden, you're all ready to judge. You've done this a million times, and everything's going to be easy. And you walk in, and the ring is set up in a way you've never had one set up before because of a door or a light or a gate or whatever it might be. We had 2 gates at COVID, and you didn't, you know, you all of a sudden, you're like, wait a second, I've got to think about procedure here and how I'm going to go through this.
Oh, yeah. And now with the table and the ramp, because when we're up here, we tend not, we don't, some shows do, but some shows leave them in the ring. So you have to work around them.
Yeah.
And it's different for us. We didn't grow up with the ramp. The ramp is relatively new to us. Yeah, so
here too.
And I think it's been so great for certain breeds, you know, judges' backs.
How about all breeds, Will? I'd say Irish setters on a ramp, not a problem.
Can you imagine those? Can you imagine the unruly Gordon setters on the ramp, though? Because we could, no matter what Gordon setter you had, you could set it up on the table because of the balance issue. But on the ground, they'd screw with you because they'd outweigh you and back up. But on the ramp, you might have the upper hand with those Gordon setters.
Well, I was just talking to our buddy Ken Murray. He came back from judging hundreds or over 100 golden retrievers. And he said his back was really bad.
Hurt.
And I said, okay, what people, even the fittest, stand up in a room for 6 hours on concrete floors and bend over slightly every 2 minutes. Try that. Try just bending over slightly and standing back up over and over and over again every 2 minutes for 8 hours or 6 hours. But it's really unnatural. And you have to be mindful of that stuff. You watch someone like Pat Trotter. She's so efficient running a ring. From where she stands to where she marks her book, it's like working in a kitchen where you can touch everything from one place. She's got everything right there.
And so it's amazing. You don't understand how important that is when you're showing dogs, how important the economy of motion is for the judge. Because it does make a big difference. But there was two breeds when I was showing dogs that really pushed my back. It was boxers, mm-hmm. and it's because of the level.
Yeah.
And Airedales because of the level. Yeah. I'll tell you, one time Harry O'Donohue was judging and he pulled out my friend Colin and I and worked us with the two specials in Vesta Breed and Boxers. And by the time he was done, both our backs were shot.
I'll bet. Yeah, that's one of those, what are you tilting 20 degrees forward or
whatever? Right. Yeah.
And when I see some of the configurations that people, handlers, put themselves through.
Oh.
Or now that they're doing the baiting and twisting their legs and standing in front and holding the bait. Some of that is so funny. It's like the
I used to be so rude too. Not rude, but I'd be query with them. I'd be in the front of the line and watch one of these younger handlers just dancing around their dog. I'm like, are you okay? Do you need medication? Are you having a seizure back there?
Well, I sent you the picture of that girl with a gun dog that was in the most like pretzel shape standing in front of the dog with the chicken liver Macarena, whatever they're feeding them these days. Gosh, you know, one of my jobs at the Forsythes was that darn liver. You had to cook it and then you had to pack it in salt and put it in a coffee can.
Yeah, that's what Stebby used to do. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
And then you had to wash the salt off and dry it up and get it ready for Janie. Part of your job. Now it's chicken in the bra. There's a lot of chicken.
Oh, I hate the chicken. Chicken. I always tell my students, don't use chicken because it falls apart. Then dogs are diving to get it.
Yeah.
I don't use chicken. I don't like hard bait where they're trying to snap it off too. I don't like that.
So. Yeah. And every once in a while, you'll see an exhibitor say, "Is that person have a big chunk of liver in their mouth?" And then they give it to the dog. Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, we do that.
We also have sport jackets with holes in the pockets because we.
You know how that there's when you drop food, there's a 3 second rule. You know, I blow it off 3 seconds. Not a dog show. It's a 10 second rule. Could drop in sawdust and you're still going to blow it off and eat it.
It is true. Yeah. We had next, Will.
This weekend, I'm heading to your country. I'm heading to Edison, New Jersey for the Big Apple Sporting Dog Special. I think that's what it's called this weekend.
I don't know. I know that it continues.
The Sporting Dog Special on the Thursday and then 3 Aubrey's Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. And that's in Edison, New Jersey. I've never been to that facility.
Neither have I. So I'm looking forward to it.
And you'll see. You'll have an assistant, Will.
I know. He's already contacted me.
I have an assistant. Young Brody Kavanaugh is going to go see his hero.
Brody Kavanaugh.
And learn a thing or two.
He has a gift for me. He said, depending on how pointers go, we may have to break into it early. So I'm not quite sure what it is yet.
I know what it is. And it combines dogs and hockey very well.
Ooh, my two favorite things.
Anyway, very excited to see you, and it'll be fun he's going to be in his element up there. And that's where he was born. You know, he was raised there for 5 years before he moved to Michigan. But he has his roots, and he'll be able to eat all his New Jersey food and see his peeps. So,
what is a New Jersey food? Just so I know.
Oh. Well, bagels.
Yeah.
Bagels, pizza.
That's a Montreal food, New Jersey. Yeah. I mean, not bagels. Bagels in Montreal.
No, I guess it would be, right? hard rolls, pork roll sandwich was on a hard roll with pork roll and eggs. It's just delightful. And you can't get a hard roll anywhere except in that general area of the country.
I've never even heard of that. So they're
not hard. You know, their hard rolls have a maybe crusty exterior, but they're just wonderful. And why moving to Michigan, when I moved to Georgia many years ago, I remember walking into the grocery store and asking where the marinara sauce was. Couldn't find it. They sent me to the ethnic aisle, Will. Now, things have changed, obviously. Now, I went for provolone in Capicola. They really didn't know what I was talking about, but it all depends. And out here, we have our, you know, we have certain items that aren't attainable and others that are. But yeah, they keep trying to make good pizza out here. I don't know, get it right one of these days. Nothing like New York pizza, Will. Nothing.
God, you're right. I will agree with you there.
Nothing like it, but it'll be fun.
There's pizza everywhere, and you never turn down a slice because it's pizza, but some are better than others, Wayne.
That's true. That is true. I would love to get out there. I'm going to be away. So I tried to arrange my flights, and it would be like I'd get there for 2 hours on Sunday morning, and it just wouldn't work out. So
you could hold the beagle for me.
He will hold the beagle for you. Yeah, he'll be cool. He's a real good worker. He seriously is. He'll help. Whenever you need to be done, he can hold a dog. The only thing is, he looks better holding a dog than you or I do, Will.
Yeah,
he's got the suits. He's taller.
Yeah, I know.
Don't let him upstage you. Anyway, after that, what's your course of action? You are coming to the garden. You better. Why couldn't you come to the garden? Besides not having anything to do there.
No, I can definitely go. I have a place to stay, and I can just go and watch. And yeah, I'm sure I'll make an appearance. So.
Yeah, we'd love to see you there, and I'd love to watch you watching and get your opinions on dogs too. That's the biggest thing, right? Is going and finding new dogs and talking about the dogs you see. I was talking to a judge this weekend, who another judge said, "Hey, you said some bad things about my dog," and the judge said, "I've also given him like a group 3, a group 2, and a group 4." I don't think that ever came out of my mouth. But here's what I heard that you said about a dog, and they both had a good laugh over it. Yeah. You know, even judges are going to say, "What did you think of that?" in confidence. And the other judge might say, "Really liked it, but I'd like to see a better turnstile," right, or whatever. Right. That's not ripping on your dog. That's two people trying to figure out what is good and bad and what they can learn along the way. So
no question. Even the greatest dogs in history, you look at it and go, "Oh, that's such a beautiful dog," and you want to change certain. You want to change, no matter what, you want to change something.
Yeah, one of my favorite dogs of all time, Bill McFadden, would tell you. There's things he'd change.
Oh,
I don't know what they are. I don't even think I want to know because he was so damn amazing. They don't want to. I don't want to.
You can't let those negative thoughts take away your goosebumps, you know?
Of course not. Yes. There's some of my favorite dogs that still give me goosebumps that I know had faults. They all have. Every single dog. Your dog might be perfect, ladies and gentlemen, but our dogs all have a couple things we'd like to change. That's the goal, right? Keep working towards
it. Sure. And like, again, going back to my seminar and my classes, I always tell them to keep things in perspective so they know when they walk in a ring. Most handlers, when they walk into the ring, they know which dog is their competition. They know which, and it's not just because the other handler, they know which dog they'd like to have on the end of their lead.
Yeah.
And so you need to keep that in perspective and know that as well. So it makes things a whole lot easier while you're out there.
Well, back in the day that I won a racehorse in an essay contest, I think I told that story. People would say, "Are you going to win? I'll bet on your horse if you know he's going to win." We all think we're going to win. We wouldn't have entered the race.
Why we're there, right?
And the same thing is true for dog shows. Your expectations are always to win. Or maybe your hope is always to win. But if you only go to win, you're really going to miss so much of the sport, you know? I wish more people would not go to train at an on-breed show.
Yeah. That's spend annoying. $30 to train your dog in the ring. Yeah.
That's
it's annoying. So funny when you talked about there to win. When you're at a big dog show, when someone shows up and they'll say, "Oh, he's here for a reason." I always say to them, "Aren't you here for a reason?"
That's a good response, Will.
Right.
That's a real good response. It's true. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Absolutely true.
We're all there for a reason.
Yeah. Onion beat Secretariat once. Onion.
Onion.
So anything can happen.
Yeah. So. We lost Ira Setters when I was a kid, dog show, to a dog named Say Hello to Red Pop. He didn't make that much of a stamp on the Ira Setter breed, but I never forgot that name. Say hello to Red Pop.
You should talk Jill into naming a dog the same. I think it would be great.
I always thought that. And he won one day, and then who won? Say hello to Red Pop.
You can do a say hello again to Red Pop and see if it changes your luck. Any, I don't know. Well, how's your seminar set for the year? Do you have any scheduled coming up?
Yeah, I've got a few scheduled.
Any down here?
I think I have one in Massachusetts. I one in Pennsylvania, I believe. I've got to confirm them all. These are all inquiries. We were looking for dates because it's hard to find dates because you don't want to conflict with a dog show. Mm-hmm. You don't want to conflict with what if I have something going on up here. It's hard to. I hate looking at my calendar.
Oh God, yes.
In fact, this last night I was driving to my class last afternoon, and I always have my calendar book with me. I have it open as I'm driving. I thought, I don't have a break for like 3 weeks. I don't have a day.
Yeah.
So right away I canceled a dog show. I started juggling. I'm not going to do this dog show. I'm going to take that weekend off and stay home and paint or do something.
Life balance is way too important. You know, we need to do that. And I hate looking at my calendar because it makes me realize I'm not going to get it all done. I can't, and you get so all anxious.
It does make you anxious. It's overwhelming sometimes looking at your to-do list and it's not done, you know?
Yep, it's true.
And life, you know, life is important. Like, this is a bad segue, but I lost a very good friend this week.
And you know
him as well. John Glover passed away this week. And John Glover was a huge part of my life entirely. But when I was a young handler, my mentor at that point, Gary McDonald, had passed away. And Gary and John were very good friends. So I think John took it upon himself to look after me. Besides you, John always called me Young William. Even even last week, Peter Scott and I went to visit him in the hospital, and the first little bit was a little unsettling because he had just woken up and I'm sure he was medicated, but then by the middle of it, he called me Young William. He was, I don't know how well you knew John. He was gruff and like he said things the way it was, but there was no softer person. There was nobody that would do anything to help somebody. And he always helped you in a comical way. I remember Peter Scott and I always had, we're not the most mechanically trained people. You know, so when something would go wrong with one of our vehicles, it was called John. And it was always something. Like one time, Peter was freaking out because his brake lights wouldn't go off. They wouldn't go off. He was freaking out. So he called John, and John opened up the front, took Peter's briefcase off his brake pedal and said, "You should be okay now." But it was things like that. And it was like, and when Jamie was young in the dog shows, Jamie, my son, Jamie Alexander, John was a huge fisherman. And when the show was over, he always knew where to go fishing. Oh. Well, he'd always take James at that point. And James loved his Uncle John. And if we couldn't find, John always told one of us, Allison or I, where he was taking us. Yeah. But if we couldn't find it, we'd go down to the shore, and there'd be James on a little, he'd be sitting on a stool. He'd have John's jacket over him, fishing pole in the water. John would be freezing with his jacket off and cleaning whatever James managed to pull in, you know. It was really cool. He was an incredible guy. He made the best shepherd's pie in the world. He always planned huge dinners for everybody. He was Ontario Dog Show's Superman because he would do whatever he had to. Mm-hmm. If a handler came in from, I remember when CJ Favre first started coming to dog shows, John, everybody back up, who's this handler coming to? John would be right there. One of a beer, CJ, and it just became a family again. You know,
how cool.
Well, yeah, he was incredible, and we're all going to miss him. And yeah, that's all I better say now.
Well, you know, Will, I mean, I know he had such an impact on your life and others. He was larger than life, too, in many ways. I didn't know him well, but I've always admired your relationship with him and how much you learned. It's not about dogs. It's not about life with those guys, right?
Life. Like I told you, when Gary passed away, I was sort of on my own showing dogs. And I needed that sounding board. I needed that person that said, I think you should do this instead of that, young William.
I can tell you, you know, Bob Forsyth was certainly, and Tom Bradley and Ralph Del Deo. They were people who taught me not only about dogs, but about life, about everything from manners to dining and dressing and what to say to people and, you know. We didn't.
When I teach my seminar, I have a section where you're new to dog shows and you're looking for that person to help you, and I call it standing on the shoulders of giants. Yeah. And when you think back on anybody in this sport that's been successful or made a name for themselves in this sport, they were always standing on somebody's shoulders, and then. Like standing on the shoulders of giants is perfect because I think I've stood on the shoulders of giants my whole career.
Yeah.
And it helped me.
He's certainly one of them. And now, of course, people try to stand on our shoulders because we are giants, and it hurts a lot, Will, because our back and our shoulders are not what they used to be. So no, I don't recommend standing on our shoulders.
I remember this one time, Doug Belter and I were on the Blue Water Circuit in Ontario, and at the end of the day, all the young assistants and whatnot, they wanted to play touch football.
Ah.
And so Dougie and I were like, oh, yeah, we'll play touch football with you. And we played and got the game over with. It was great. You could see us wincing, you know. Well, the next day, you couldn't even touch us. Both Dougie and I, we acted like we had the bravado. That was a great game last night. They'd walk away. Oh, my God. I can't breathe. I can't move. I can't. And that was just touch football. Yep.
And that probably wasn't this year, Will. That
was This was 15, 20 years ago. We were, oh, yeah, we'll play. Count us in, guys.
We got this. Oh, man. Yeah, I know. I remember Brody. We used to go to Mexico quite a bit. We still do. And when the kids were little, we took them with us to somewhere in, I don't know, it's probably Playa del Carmen or something. And Brody had a sunburn. So he stayed in and watched wrestling. He watched TV for a couple hours in the morning. And there was Mexican wrestling on. And that was it. He had to have the mask. Have you seen? They wear the full mask, and it's a big, I mean, it's really phenomenal.
The mask marvel.
Yeah, it's terrific. So you had to get the mask. And they sell the masks everywhere, on the beaches, everywhere, you know. And, of course, he had to buy a mask. And then he wanted to wrestle me. And, of course, up to this point, it's pretty easy. But the day they pin you, Will, the first day.
Don't try it now. We just hope the respect level keeps them at bay.
And now the size of our boys, they could pick us up and swing us around our head and put it back down again.
It's so funny. My youngest is 6'3", right? He's a tall, tall boy. And he's even once in a while, he gets all cocky and headbutt or chest butts me or something, right? Yeah. And I'll say, you see how high you are? I said, it's going to hurt when you fall from 6'3".
Yeah, that'll get you by for a while. Then you hope you
exactly,
get old enough.
So you got to use that just in the verbal for now and hope the respect level kicks in later.
Yeah, that's the only hope. They feel sorry for you later on and don't try. Anyway, we'll have a good time, Dennis, and you'll be there. Brody, you haven't met Margaret yet. Brody will be there with Margaret.
Haven't I?
Oh, maybe you have at the wedding.
I think I have met Margaret. Yeah, I think I have.
And their dogs it'll be a fun affair. Win, lose, or draw, it'll be fun.
Yeah, I think I've met Archie, too. I don't think I've met the new dog, though.
Archie's a handsome dog. Archie, yeah. We're not pimping my son's dog, Archie, because he only has one testicle. Don't worry about it.
Unless he's going in the altar class, we're not pimping Archie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. But he's a character. What a character, loving dog. And he's pretty good-looking, too. You'd be surprised. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Pretty good-looking.
No matter what dog you have, it's easier to have one that looks good.
My father used to say, it costs the same to feed a good one as it does an ugly one. And he's right. Someone, a friend, was saying that their puppy didn't turn out quite well. And even though it was now in a, you know, a young adult, it was time, you know, thinking about finding another place for it to live. And just turmoil, you know, thinking about this, you know, the just gut-wrenching emotions going through their mind. And I just said, you know, just keep the best and breed the best of the best. Right. You can find great homes for these dogs. We just found out that a couple that we sold a number three sporting dog in the country to, because he was sterile and I wasn't going to do that.
He was a beauty.
Oh, he was. But I immediately, once he went sterile, I couldn't do what people do.
Just everything against what we're doing, you know?
Yeah. And we were evaluating breeding stock. You couldn't breed them. So he got placed in a wonderful home, and with these three little triplets, and they were probably 8 years old at the time. And there were three of them, Will. That's why they call them triplets. Mm. And very good with the numbers.
And the same terms up here.
Yeah, same terms. But two of them just graduated from medical school, and they're young adults, and they're doing great, and they still speak fondly of their time with Ernie.
Ernie. My gosh.
Man, that was a great dog. Yeah, he was a daughter of the beautiful son who won the group at Crufts. Caught us, I love and a mist under Frank King.
There you go.
Who I'll see.
You know what? Oh, Frank's here this weekend, actually, in Edison, isn't he? Yep. You know who else I get to see? I forgot all about this. No, who else I get to see in Edison this weekend? I get to meet for the very first time in Edison, New Jersey.
Who?
My granddaughter, Savannah Grace Bernardin.
Oh, she's coming to the show. Oh, yep. That'll be great.
I get to meet her. I'm getting I forget what it's called, a DTaP shot. I'm getting that today. It's a vaccine against whooping cough.
Yes.
I'm getting that done today, and I'm going to go see my granddaughter. I asked her if they need anything. They said no. I'm sure she needs for nothing. Yes. She wants for nothing, that young lady, but I'm looking forward to meeting her very much.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, that'll be fun. That's what it's all about, right? Yeah. That's what it's all about. And when you think about it, how many minutes is your dog in the ring, and how many minutes are they home, and how many minutes are you at the show with your friends in the larger scheme of things? We embrace every one of those minutes. Yeah. When you get older and wiser and put these things in perspective, it's the people that counts. And the dogs are the glue.
That's right. That's what they brought us together, but yeah. We're a family now.
Look at you, Will. Without dogs, I wouldn't have one of my best friends. So.
Oh, I know. I feel exact same way, Wayne.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
How would we ever met? You know,
it's true. Yeah, probably at the hockey game.
Maybe there's the other avenue there.
But you know, I don't get to many Maple Leafs games. In fact, I've never been any.
We'll have to fix that. You'll have to come up here, stay up here, and we'll go to a game.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Anyway, all right, onward and upward. Many things to do. Places to be, people to see, dogs to walk. It's been wonderful, young William. Enjoy Edison. Enjoy your dogs and your travels, and we hope to see you soon, bud.
Sure.
All's
everybody
well.
Out there listening, stay safe no matter where you're going, and we'll talk to you next week.
Party on, Greg.
No way.
Way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Thanks for listening.
So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself so damn seriously.
Wayne! I'm falling apart!
Yeah, they want to see it in a blueprint. This is good. We're going to be here in a second, Wayner.